Translation. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When the four previous sons of Brahma, the sages Sanaka, Sanatan, Sanandan, and Sanatkumar, refused to obey their father, Brahma was mortified, and his anger was manifested in the shape of Rudra. That incident was not forgotten by Brahma, and therefore the obedience of Manu Svayambhuva was very encouraging. From the material point of view, the four sages' disobedience to the order of their father was certainly abominable. But because such disobedience was for a higher purpose, they were free from the reaction of disobedience. Those who disobey their fathers on material grounds, however, are surely subjected to disciplinary reaction for such disobedience. Manu's obedience to his father on material grounds was certainly free from envy, and in the material world, it is imperative for ordinary men to follow the example of Manu. Amagyana Timrandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshur Umila Tamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto him. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Hrida Ananda Goswami Nityanamani. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swami Nityanamani. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasakacharya Shatarane. Mukham Karoti Bachalam Pangam Langeti Girim Yat Kripata Maham Vande Sri Gurundina Tarnam. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudirayat. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda sahodito gaudadai pushpanvato chitro tanno shamodavam. Offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have arisen over the horizon of Gaudadesh, just like the sun and the moon, to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all and to dissipate the darkness of ignorance. Etavat atmajer vira karya hyapachitir guru shaktya pramater griheta sadaram gatamatsare. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. Before I begin, I'd like to ask all the Vaishnavas for your attention and goodwill so that you can help me to express myself competently. First of all, it's important to understand the context here that Svayambhuva Manu is being asked to manage the universe. And as we heard in the purport, just prior to him being asked, Lord Brahma had this experience of his other four sons. He had many sons, of course, but this particular quartet, the four Kumaras, they refused. There are other precedents, there are other examples of when this happens, when there's a refusal to accept the order of the superior. The subordinate has been recalcitrant, I guess would be the word, rebellious. And that's not really what I'm going to focus on in this class, because what's more important is when we see the qualities that's required to actually follow. It's fine to disobey the order of the superior, like in this case, the four Kumaras disobeyed because it endangered their Krishna consciousness. It endangered their love for Krishna. They didn't want to be separated from that. And all pure devotees refuse to let anything separate them from their love for Krishna. That's the primary feature that symptomizes the spiritual world. Nobody will allow their love to be endangered, no matter what, for Krishna. There's one other example where it's interesting because Brahma is asking Swayambhuvamanu to be the manager. And then further down the line, Swayambhuvamanu is asking his son to be the manager, Priyavrata. Swayambhuvamanu had two sons. One was Uttanapad, one was Priyavrata. Priyavrata, from the very beginning, did not want to have anything to do with management. He wanted to simply meditate, connect with Krishna, and develop his love for Krishna, which he was successfully doing. Uttanapad took up the management, and then his line of descent, the genealogy following Manu, went all the way to the Prachetas. And we know that the Prachetas... it went all the way to... the Haryashvas, who had no... they didn't have any children. So the line finished. There was no one to inherit the responsibility of managing the universe. So Swayambhuvamanu went to his other son and said, okay, now you have to do it. But Priyavrata was absorbed in his meditation and in his love for Krishna and didn't want to do it. And then there's this kind of dramatic scenario where Swayambhuvamanu is kind of a little bit in despair, and so he calls upon Lord Brahma to come and try and convince him. At the same time, Narada Muni is telling Priyavrata, no, you stay brahmachari. You don't get into becoming married and getting entangled in management. You just stay as you are. So there was this kind of tug of war going on. But finally, he did take up the management and did get married. And that's another scenario. But here it says that Brahma is very happy with his son. In the word for word, it's talking about superior to subordinate. The terms are more in terms of this is the person who's an authority and this is the person who's meant to follow. So specifically, we have a situation of father and son, but it's a generic situation. So this applies to, for instance, spiritual master, disciple. It might apply to, you know, the temple president and whoever else, the department head and whoever's in the department. It's applying to the general situation of authority to the follower. And what it's saying is that if we look at the terms, Lord Brahma is saying such adoration for the superior is required. And this is like the dynamic of what a healthy relationship is in Krishna consciousness. So first of all, there must be adoration for the superior. And he says that he's looking and he's saying, you know, you're executing this order that I'm giving you with great delight. And you're executing it to your full capacity. So there's three terms here. Adoration for the superior, executing of the service with great delight, and executing that service to one's full capacity. And then on the other side, the other terms are, you're able to do that if you are free from envy and if you are sane. So those are the other prerequisites, that the person be free from envy and that they be sane. So if you get all these ingredients together, you attain this healthy, optimum level of, you know, relationship and potency. So that's why I chose this verse, because it's meant to be leading up to the marathon. So everybody should be interested in how to attain this full capacity so that you can actually enter into the marathon with heart and soul and give it everything you got. So my sort of experience of when this happens, this attaining of your full capacity, really this only happens when Krishna enters into the equation, when Krishna's participating. I mean, we know from just our experience in the morning program that sometimes, you know, we're in the kirtan and suddenly there's this atmosphere descends and everyone's off the mental platform. There's no more being self-conscious about anything. Everyone's spontaneous and it's all fluent and it's wonderful. And that's because Krishna's participating. Krishna's pleased. Somehow Krishna's become pleased and he's entered into that atmosphere. There's a term in the Bhagavad Gita where it says the supreme eternal atmosphere. I know Kishore Prabhu is here and he chairs our reading group. And sometimes in the reading group this happens, you know. All of a sudden it's like you've entered this dimension which is otherworldly. And everyone's just uninhibited and there is no, as T.S. Eliot once quoted, he said, between the thought and the action falls the shadow. Between the thought and the action falls the shadow, because he's saying the shadow, the darkness between the thought and the action. Because when you're not, if you're not pure, if you're contaminated, then you can't be spontaneous. You need that filter to remain civilized. If you don't have that filter, that gap between the thought and the action, then the contamination comes out and all sorts of havoc is wreaked. But when Krishna enters that atmosphere and there is this wonderful environment, then somehow we're purified for that moment. It's stated, actually, it's in that pastime of the Prachetas that they got on so well with each other. And it says that when everyone joins together with Krishna as the common focus, then everyone stops, even for that moment, while that's happening, nobody is envious of each other. Because Krishna is the cynosure, Krishna is the focus. So we enter that, we attain that ability to reach our full capacity when Krishna is present. So then when is Krishna present? When does Krishna enter? What are the circumstances that are needed for Krishna to enter? And we all know the answer to that. It's when there is unmotivated love. When that love is unmotivated, then that's what purchases Krishna. Then Krishna becomes controlled by that love. And then that's when Krishna manifests. So there's no selfish interest. And we can all sort of, we all stumble into that every now and then. That feeling that we have this sincere feeling of just wanting to put all of our own agenda aside and just serve Krishna as purely as possible. When that happens, that's when Krishna joins in, and that's when the empowerment happens, and that's when you're in that zone. And as long as you can stave off your selfishness from interfering, you know, the rebellious mind from interfering, then Krishna will also stay there. So it's now what is the situation for most of us, is that it's very hard to keep your own agenda at bay and your own self-interest, because we can't sort of just decide to become pure. You can't just make that decision, from now on, I'm going to be totally pure, I'm going to be totally without motives, I'm going to love Krishna unmotivated. You can't decide it. Generally, it's a gradual process. You know, we start with Shraddha and we end with Prem. And when you're in the state of Prem, that's going on, without it even being a conscious decision. It's just the reality of that person's existence, that they've got this unmotivated, exclusive love for Krishna. But from Shraddha to Prem is like, there's all these stages that take you to there. You know, it's there's one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that says, smaranta smarayantascha mito goga haram harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya vibrat utpulakam tanum. And it's saying that devotees attain ecstatic symptoms by remembering and reminding others of Krishna. So that's what this, you know, book distribution is all going to be all about, remembering Krishna and then going out there and reminding others by giving them a book. So it's saying that devotees attain these ecstatic symptoms by remembering and reminding others of Krishna. But in the third line it says, bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, that this is made possible by rendering devotional service according to the routine regulative principles and then rising to the platform of ecstatic love. So it's saying that it begins with the regulations, the sadhana, and then it rises from there. So we have to learn how to... This is, to me, a really key point, that we have to learn how, whatever service we're doing, we have to learn how to perform the sadhana of that service to our full capacity and with great delight and with adoration for the superior, whoever that may be in the situation we're in, whoever's the authority in the situation we're in. We need to develop that adoration for them. Not be envious, because remember it says those who are not envious and who are sane. Because it's actually, technically, it's a state of insanity to be envious. Because I won't get into the technicalities of breaking that down, but... There's a possibility to be also envious of yourself. So if you're envious of yourself, that's not a very sane mentality. And being envious of others is really tantamount to being envious of yourself. As Suniti spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, and she said to him that, you know, don't wish anything inauspicious to anybody. You know, if you inflict pain upon another, you're inflicting pain upon yourself. So when we're envious of others, there's some envy in us as well. We're envious of ourselves. So how to perform our service to our full capacity with great delight? You know, this morning program is just to coin a phrase. It's like a safe playground. You know, little children, when their playground is safe, they can explore and develop all their powers, you know, of running and jumping, and they can sort of see how far they can go. There's somebody there, I was telling Sada about this book called Catcher in the Rye, where the children are playing on this high plateau, and there's a cliff, and it's amongst all these grain... it's a field of rye, but at the end there's this cliff. And if you're running through the rye and you don't realize there's a cliff at the end, you're just going to go fall off the cliff. And this this person saw that the children were playing in this field of rye and that they didn't know that the cliff was there. So he took it upon himself to be the person who, if they get too close to the cliff, he would catch them before they fall off the cliff. He assumed that responsibility. So then, because he was there, you know, the children didn't know the cliff was there, but he was there. They were playing so happily and so with such abandon. So the morning program is like a safe playground. You know, we have these different parts of the morning program, and what we have to learn to do is enter into it as fully as possible and explore what we're capable of. You know, somebody's singing, we're all following. There's a person who's leading, we're all the followers. We have to follow as close as possible to the person who's leading. And then we'll sort of expand our capacity. Because it's saying here that Brahma's happy with Manu because he's executing the order to his full capacity. So we may not even know what that is at this point. But how do you find out? You find out by continually expanding your capacity. And then you start to realize how far you can go, what your capacity is. It's going to be different for everybody. But if we, you know, do not enter in to the, you know, morning program, then how are we ever going to find out? Because this is a safe playground. You can't find out. You're not going to have any better chance in a dangerous playground because then you're nervous about something else, you know, about something unpredictable happening. So, for instance, when I notice sometimes with the Tulsi Arati, somebody will, at the end or, you know, at the beginning, at the end, we say the pranam, Vrindai Tulasi Devai Priyaye Keshavasya Cha. And sometimes a person will raise it at a register. Vrindai Tulasi Devai Priyaye Keshavasya Cha. So my understanding is that if we're going to find out what our full capacity is, when the person sings it in the lower register, we should sing it in the lower register. And when he sings it in the higher register, we should sing it in the higher register. And that's called following. And try to follow it as close as possible. There's only one danger which when you're trying to follow a leader as close as possible. And that one danger is that suddenly you decide to kind of usurp that person. Because you're following so closely, there's not much between you and where they're taking you. So you might, you know, this sometimes happens, that the person suddenly scoots in front of the leader and causes confusion. So we just have to be very guarded against that. I remember a little while ago, I got this realization because Dayananda Maharaj was leading Mangalati. And I came a little bit late, a few minutes, and he was singing and he was the only one playing kartels. And I thought, I'd like to augment. I'm going to try and give my energy as much as possible to help augment his Mangalati. So I went and got a pair of kartels and I stood behind and I'm playing. And I was trying to think, well, okay, how can I follow him as close as possible? And so I found myself meditating more on him than on the deities, actually. But I thought, okay, but the deities will be pleased with me because if I can contribute to enhancing the atmosphere, they'll be more pleased with that because it's more selfless than that, you know, here I am, Krishna, you know, and I'm meditating on you and, you know, I've got these desires, don't you? So, you know, you can reciprocate with my desires and I'm reciprocating with you by being here. Instead of that kind of mindset, I thought, how can I enhance this atmosphere? And so I was trying to play right behind him. But I realized that if I start playing too loud, it's like I'm taking over. And then I'm not helping him then. I'm not actually helping him at all anymore. So that's the principle, is that you participate as fully as possible tucking yourself in underneath the direction of the leader, and be very careful that you don't usurp the leader. And if we practice that, then things become a lot less mental, because we're absorbed. This is a way of becoming absorbed, and we become a lot less mental about what is my role, because everybody's role in Krishna consciousness is to participate as fully as possible to please the spiritual master. So if we do that, it means we're displacing our own agenda. We're getting absorbed in how to serve to our full capacity. And so then our own agenda is actually put back, you know, where it belongs, out of the picture. And then when we put our agenda out of the picture, and our only intention is to simply enhance, you know, the experience of Krishna consciousness for everyone, that's when Krishna enters. And that's when we reach our full capacity. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi. So, so these are just some thoughts on, you know, I'm talking in general, just sort of philosophical principles, and this can all be applied to book distribution. You know, how to reach our full capacity. You know, when we stop someone, we're putting our own agenda aside and we're just putting our entire focus on this person, on creating a connection with this person. And we're being very careful that we don't usurp this person, that we don't start dominating them and forcing them to, you know, to our will. Because the way to distribute a book is to charm the person so that they choose to, by their free will, to, because they feel that you actually care, so with their free will they want to reciprocate. So this caring is important. There's one part of the Bhagavatam that's very, very edifying as far as this point goes. It's that pastime in the Bhagavatam where the demigods, the demons have overthrown the demigods, and the demigods are trying to get back their kingdom. And so this happens various places, but on this particular occasion, they approach the sage Dadachi because they need his bones to fashion a thunderbolt weapon for Indra to defeat Vritrasura. And so they approach him for this donation, and just as, you know, devotees are going to be approaching people for donations so that they can distribute them a book, but on this occasion the donation that's being requested is for this person's bones. So Dadachi Muni, you know, they came and asked for the bones, but he didn't just give it straight away. Just like people don't just give their money straight away either. They want to see something from you. They want to see what you're made of first. Same with Dadachi Muni. So he said to them, well, let me hear you speak a little bit about religious principles before I give up my bones. Let me hear you speak a little bit. So then the demigods, they spoke this verse, Nunam svarta paro loko na veda para sankatam yadi veda nayacheta neti naha yadishvara. And they were saying that in this verse it says that one who is too self-interested will beg from another, not knowing of the other's pain. Because if he knew of the other's pain, he would not ask for anything. So consider this. If you're too self-interested, if you're only thinking of yourself, what's in it for me, then you're asking something from people. You want something. You don't empathize with them. You're only interested in what's in it for me. You're not interested in what their situation is. They may be in pain. They may not be in a position to give to you. But if someone's too self-interested, that doesn't matter. Because all that matters is what I'm interested in. What they're interested in isn't really at issue here. And then he says, similarly, one who is too self-interested, one who is too self-interested will not give to another, not knowing of the other's pain. Because if he knew of the other's pain, he would not hesitate to give him everything that the person needed. So, when the demigods spoke this, they were indirectly saying, you know, they were saying, we know that, you know, we are empathizing with you. We're not just asking you for your bones. We recognize who you are. We've searched within us to actually identify you, who you are. And we can see that you're an exalted personality. That you don't really need those bones, because when you give them up, you're going back to Godhead. So this is just in your self-interest also, because you don't need to stay in this material world any longer. So they were saying that when they conveyed this to Dadachi Muni, then he said, you're right. This body, it doesn't do me any good. He said, it's usable just for a short time. It's going to end up getting eaten by jackals and dogs. This body isn't important to me. And so then he gave up his bones. So I'm trying to sort of convey the importance of this morning program, giving us an opportunity to learn how not to be too self-interested. Like, for instance, in this situation here, you know, my role is to try and be as articulate as possible and as sincere as possible in conveying my realizations. And then your role is to simply your role is to put aside all of your thoughts that may be distracting you and try and hear purely. Because it's very easy to multitask, even when you're in the Bhagavatam class. You know, you're listening, but then you're thinking about all sorts of other things. You're starting to space out, whatever. So that's your role. And if you play your role properly, and I play my role properly, then Krishna enters. And then when Krishna enters, then the principle of the full capacity comes into it. So that, I was thinking if the Sankirtan devotees out on the road are listening on the internet, then I'm hoping something in this class may be useful to help you reach your full capacity, and for all of us here as well, in the coming marathon.